Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris, and you are listening to RMU Radio. We've got a busy show coming up, so let's get started. National Football League, we're getting towards the end. 3 weeks left to play. We obviously, this is our last show for the Christmas holiday. We will not be back on until the middle of January.
4 weeks.
So in the next month, there's lots of stuff to watch. Let's look at the current standings before we get too far ahead of ourselves, though. In the AFC right now is the Baltimore Ravens at 11-2 leading the way. Behind them by one game and by a tiebreaker, the New England Patriots sit at 10-3. The Chiefs behind them at 9-4, followed by the Texans at 8-5. The wildcard teams, the Buffalo Bills at 9-4, and the Pittsburgh Steelers at 8-5 behind them. Tennessee 8-5, Cleveland 6-7, Oakland 6-7, Colts 6-7.
So Cleveland, Oakland, and Indianapolis technically in the race still, but at 6-7 and a full 2+ games out of the wild card, they're kind of not really in it right now. They need to basically all win out and some help, which the way it's looking, it's not going to be very ideal for them. Tennessee, though, very much in both the wild card and the division races. They are tied with Houston. Obviously, Houston has a tiebreaker, but two of these last 3 weeks of the season, the Titans will play the Texans. Those games will decide.
Those games are huge.
Who is going to win their division, who's going to have a home football game, and who may or may not make the playoffs. Because as it currently stands, this week, if the Steelers win, they'll be tied with the Buffaloes, with the Bills, because them two play each other. And then if Houston or Tennessee wins, whoever loses will not be in the playoff picture at that point. They'll be at 8-6. They'll get that option the week 17, though, to redeem themselves. But it's a huge game this week with major playoff implications.
Yeah, the AFC is pretty entertaining because there's really, no matter where you look, a really good battle. Baltimore has clinched a playoff spot, and the Chiefs have clinched the AFC West. Those are the only two things that are clinched at all in the AFC. Even a team like the Patriots at 10-3 and currently in position to have a first-round bye, they have not clinched anything because the Bills are only a game behind them, and they do still play each other. So no matter whether you're looking at a division, whether you're looking at the wild card spots, whether you're looking at positioning, all these battles are really close. I think for a while we've kind of talked about all those teams I listed as in the hunt as really being in the hunt. And like you said, that's not so much the case. At this point, you're looking at seven teams for six spots. But what makes it really exciting is that for a team like Tennessee, they've got multiple ways to get in there. Houston the same way, obviously. Buffalo realistically has two chances to get in. Pittsburgh not so much, but with the matchup against the Bills this week, a win there elevates them above Buffalo and now puts them at the top wildcard spot instead of the bottom. So they have room to move even if it realistically is not in the division.
Yeah, the Ravens pretty much have the division locked up. Technically, they don't. If the Steelers win out and the Ravens lose out, but neither of those things are going to happen.
For what it's worth, they do play each other in Week 17, but I think any Steeler fan would say at this point, it's better for the Ravens to just continue to win and then rest players in that Week 17 in case that game is pivotal for the Steelers getting in at all. Realistically, to win the division, the only way it happens is, as you said, one wins out, the other loses out, and that's a pretty good Ravens team to lose three in a row.
Yeah, if the Ravens win their next two games, they will have the one seed clinched for Week 17. Ideally, they rest most of their starters, including Lamar Jackson, gives the Steelers a little bit of an easier path to maybe, you know, that last game at the end of the season could come down to the Bills, the Steelers, and the AFC South team for those final two spots. So if you have an easier path like the Steelers might, I mean, they play Bills this week. It's a big test. Jets not so bad in a potentially rested Ravens team. Week 17 could be easier for them. The Bills, they need to beat good teams to make it into the playoffs, and I think they very well can. Steelers this week, the Patriots next week. I'm not sure who they play Week 17, either the Jets or the Dolphins. Not that either of them are that formidable of an opponent, so they have a good chance. And as it stands, the Patriots are the second seed, but realistically they're the fourth best team in the AFC since they've lost to the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Texans. All three have tiebreakers over them. So if they all end up, I don't know, 12-4, 11-5, which is possible, they would be the fourth seed. Even if the Chiefs tie them, they're only one game back, they'd be the three seed. So Patriots are not in as familiar of a position as they typically are, though.
Yeah, it's funny. They were 11-5 last year en route to a Super Bowl. But this year, things at the top, at least record-wise, are a little bit stronger.
It's a different kind of 11-5 yeah. Last year.
And I mean, I still don't think that a lot of these teams don't scare me, despite their records. I think the AFC in general is weak, and so that elevates some of these records. I mean, time will tell, and it's an interesting, like you mentioned, an interesting dynamic at the top of this conference when it comes to who's beaten who and where teams will end up when they're jockeying for positions. But Certainly some interesting games coming up. I think the one that you didn't mention just is interesting. Kansas City does travel to Chicago. Not that Chicago's been great, but they are still playing for a playoff spot NFC. So that could be an interesting one thrown into the mix here, as a lot of conference games are what we have on the schedule. Speaking of the NFC, things are not any clearer over there.
I think less clear even.
Probably. The 49ers lead at 11-2, similar to the Ravens, followed by the Green Bay Packers, who are 10-3. The Saints also 10-3. The Packers currently have the tiebreaker. Dallas is 6-7, but we don't even need to talk about them. It's them or Philly. Both are 6-7. Play each other in Week 16. We'll get the four spot. The other one's not in contention. That's really all there is to say about the NFC East. At the wild card spots, the Seattle Seahawks are 10-3, and the Minnesota Vikings are 9-4. On the outside looking in, the Rams at 8-5, and the Bears at 7-6.
Yeah, so this one, there's a lot of movement to be had. The Niners are at the 1 seed, but last week they were the 5 seed. Them and Seattle, one game separates them, but they still play each other at the end of the season. So that whoever wins this division will be most likely the 1 seed, I would have to guess. Whoever loses it will be the 5 seed and will play either the Cowboys or the Eagles in the first round. That's huge implications. The Seahawks this past week fell to the Rams, who have started to turn on a little bit. They're on the outside looking in at 8-5, the first team out. The Bears are technically still there. They're 7-6, but they need a lot more help, just especially considering how difficult their path upwards is now. The Bears do have a rough schedule to end the season. Packers, Chiefs, Vikings, in that order. All three teams have at least 9 victories. I mean, if the Bears beat those teams, they obviously deserve a playoff spot. But when they don't, and they're on the outside looking into the playoffs, they'll probably be scratching their heads. But these are good teams they're playing. And the NFC North is just as good, I think, as the NFC West is.
These NFC teams don't lose.
They don't.
3 losses has you at a wild card spot. These teams do not lose. And for the Bears to get in, they would have to win probably all 3 of those games.
Absolutely.
That gets you to 10-6. And at that point, 10-6 right now would not even get you that first wild card spot. So I think there's a better chance of them going 0-3 than there is of them going 3-0. So I don't think that they really have a shot. The Rams could make it. But again, the teams in front of them do not lose that often. And so I think it's going to be difficult. I mentioned that there aren't a whole lot of teams clinched in the AFC. There are fewer clinched in the NFC. Only the Saints, who have taken the NFC South, like I said, they sit at 3. Everything else is up in the air. And while it doesn't seem likely that most of these teams will fall out, an 11-2 team still could essentially be caught by an 8-5 or a 9-4 team. So things are very interesting in the NFC. There are big matchups, though, here. Teams directly play each other, and we had some of that in the AFC, but I think more so here.
It's definitely more here.
The 49ers play the Seahawks in Week 17. That'll be at Seattle. Green Bay plays at Minnesota Week 16. Dallas plays at Philadelphia Week 16. Those are teams that...
The Rams play against the Niners in Week 16 as well.
Okay, there you go. So those are teams that you're playing directly who you are battling against to get a spot. A lot of those cases, it's for the... Well, all those cases, I guess it's for the division, yeah. But that also translates into a big difference in your playoff position.
Absolutely. So the Saints are the 3 seed, currently don't have a first-round bye. If Seattle ends up becoming the NFC West champion with the same record as the Saints have the tiebreaker. The Saints don't have the tiebreaker against the 49ers. There was a great game this past weekend, 48-46. No defense, tons of offense. Really a good game, probably one of the best ones you'll see during the regular season this year. But if the Saints end up with the same record as the division-winning Seahawks, they then get propelled up into that first-round bye, whereas right now the Niners have that hanging over them. And the Packers are sitting in second, but they're kind of in an interesting spot because they still do play the Vikings. I mean, they could very well lose a division to the Vikings. It's only one game that separates the two, and the Packers haven't looked as good recently as they did earlier in the season. The Vikings, I think, have kind of pretty much been fairly stable. But, I mean, there's a lot of division games. Division games really can go either way. And for the most part, these teams that are not clinched their divisions yet, they need to play difficult teams in their division that could end up being the difference between them getting a first round bye or them being the first wild card even.
Yeah, so lots to watch in the NFL coming up. January 4th to the 5th will be the wild card round as it stands right now. That would be Pittsburgh at Kansas City, Buffalo at Houston, Minnesota at New Orleans, and Seattle at Dallas, obviously subject to change, but those would be good matchups now, and I don't imagine any matchups set between now and then will be any worse. All these teams look pretty good and would make for pretty entertaining playoffs. The 11th and the 12th, which will be the last weekend before we return, will be the divisional round. Obviously, hard to say who will be playing there, but as it stands right now, the teams with the byes, Baltimore, New England, San Fran, and Green Bay. So lots to happen still in the NFL in a very short amount of time. Chris, one last thing.
Yeah, I got two players to look out for that are looking to break some records. Lamar Jackson, 22 yards away rushing from Michael Vick's quarterback rushing record. I would imagine Jackson, if he, for whatever reason, doesn't get it this Thursday against the Jets, will most certainly get it before the end of the season. So he'll probably claim that one. Another one, though, Michael Thomas, receiver for the Saints, he's on pace for 149 receptions and 1,752 yards. That would be the most receptions in a single season in history if he keeps his pace. And he's on pace for the sixth most yards in history, which he could very easily get even more than that. So some historic single player records are also looking to be broken as we come to a close this year.
Don't take your eyes off the TV on Sundays. Lots of good stuff coming up there. College football, also lots of good stuff coming up. The bowl schedule is out. The college football playoff is set. And I think for the first time, maybe ever, we are totally satisfied with what the college football playoff looks like, at least with the four teams that are in.
Yeah, there really wasn't, I don't think, much debate with the result of the championship games this past weekend. So the number one team is LSU. They defeated number four Georgia in the SEC championship. Really gave it to them as well. It wasn't that close of a game. They're the one. Ohio State slots in at the two. They were bouncing around with LSU for the one and the two throughout the rankings as we progressed through the season. They had a little bit of a rocky first half against Wisconsin, the Big Ten championship. But they realized, wait a second, we're Ohio State. We don't do that. So they took care of business in the second half, won that game, rightfully fell to second, allowed LSU to slide ahead of them. Clemson, they've kind of been the underdogs all year for absolutely no reason whatsoever. They have won 28 straight games now. I think people forget that. They cruised to an ACC championship victory. They scored 62 points against Virginia. Yes, it's Virginia. It's not a great team.
It's still 62 points.
Still a championship game against the team in your conference, so they're at three, but they very well could be the one or the two. And slotting at the four, which was probably the most controversial spot, not so controversial since teams lost. Oklahoma won the Big 12, took overtime, though, against Baylor. It was a pretty good game. They managed to come out on top, though. The reason that they're four and nobody else is because Georgia was four, they lost to LSU, and Utah was five, and they blew their opportunity to Oregon. So there really wasn't much more debate for who should slot in at four.
Yeah, and if you look at the rest of the New Year's Six Bowls, there are a lot of good matchups, and we'll talk about those later. But for now, we'll focus on the playoff games. LSU and Oklahoma will be technically the Peach Bowl. I don't really they call the semifinals the Peach Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl is the other one, and that rotates every year. I think that's weird because in other years, those games are actually bowl games that teams win that is not a stepping stone on your way to the championship game, but whatever, that's not the point. Number one, LSU, and number four, Oklahoma. I thought this was interesting. This is the first playoff appearance for LSU. They have not been this significant since the college football playoff was implemented. They are the 11th school to make the college football playoff. So that's 11 schools covering 24 spots over the years that they've been doing this.
Wow.
I thought that was kind of an interesting number.
Speaks volumes.
It does. It says a lot about an Alabama or a lot about a Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma even. I mean, I guess you can just list any team that's in this year pretty much because it's the same teams a lot. But
in general, yeah.
Anyway, very interesting there. LSU is 13-0. They have five wins against teams that were in the top 10 at the time that they played them. I think the only one in there that's a little bit suspect is Texas. Otherwise, I think those are all pretty legitimate. They do have a Heisman finalist. Quarterback Joe Burrow passed for 4,715 yards this year, 48 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. A lot of sources seem to think he's the front runner. I think you can make an argument for pretty much any of the guys that are finalists, but he will be certainly an X factor in this game. Oklahoma has their own Heisman finalist. That is their quarterback, Jalen Hurts.
Another Oklahoma quarterback.
Who not only leads the team in passing yards, obviously, as the quarterback, but also leads in rushing yards, which I know you were super excited to learn about earlier.
It's good stats.
For Oklahoma, they sit at 12-1, the only team in the playoff with a loss on their resume. They do have four wins against top 25 opponents. 28 points is the fewest that they have scored in a game this year.
Is it? How many did they score in the championship game this past week?
Ooh, I looked at regular season. I don't know. You tell me.
Wasn't
you know? Are you trying to bust my theory?
I thought it was 26-20 they beat Baylor, or 27-20.
You go ahead and take it from here. I'll look it up.
Yeah, so Jalen Hurts, like you said, he has a lot of rushing yards, 1,255, 18 touchdowns on the ground.
34-31. They came out on top.
No, that was the regular season game. Look at the Big 12 championship game.
You're right. 30-23 still.
Oh, 30? Okay.
It was still, yeah.
Okay. 28 points. That's impressive. Did LSU score less than 28 this season? Do you know that off the top of your head?
I will look at that too while you keep going.
Sure, I'll keep going. Yeah, but Jalen Hurts, he has been in the playoff before with Alabama. As a freshman, a sophomore, he was there. Then we saw the emergence of Tua in the championship game against Georgia. That kind of spelled the end of Jalen Hurts' tenure with Alabama. Kind of wondered what's left for him. He's just going to become the next Oklahoma quarterback to try to lead their team to glory, but as it's been in years past, the Oklahoma seems to be either three or the four, and then they get knocked out of the first round. So they're always good, just never good enough.
One occasion this year where LSU did not hit that 28 points when they defeated Auburn 23-20.
Okay, so these are two high-powered offenses. Yes. There's probably going to be a lot of points in this game. I mean, Joe Burrow has 48 touchdowns in the air, three on the ground. Jalen Hurts has 32 in the air, 18 on the ground. So both quarterbacks have been in the end zone 50 times. It's remarkable for these two teams. That's a reason why they're both Heisman finalists, too.
Let's go to the Fiesta Bowl. Clemson and Ohio State, it's a rematch of the 2016 Fiesta Bowl, which is also a semifinal, 31-0 in favor of Clemson that year.
Was it really?
Yes, and that was en route to a championship for then. Yeah, very ugly. Coming in this time, Ohio State is 13-0. Both teams are 13-0. For Ohio State, they have four victories over top 15 opponents. Makes sense when you look at some of the teams that the Big Ten has had up there this year, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan among those. Their Heisman finalists, actually they have two. Justin Fields, their quarterback, just under 3,000 yards passing on the year. One interception for this guy all season long is incredible. Their other, the only defensive player to be a finalist this season for the Heisman, Chase Young, 16.5 sacks and 6 forced fumbles for Chase Young. One player on the offensive side of the ball that was not a finalist for the Heisman but also very outstanding is J.K. Dobbins. 1,829 yards rushing, 20 touchdowns, also added 200 receiving yards and a couple touchdowns that way as well. So J.K. Dobbins, very dominant, and plenty of key impact players to watch out for on the Ohio State side. For Clemson, only team in the college football playoff without a Heisman finalist, but quarterback Trevor Lawrence has won a national championship before. He was over 3,000 yards passing to go with 34 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. And of course, their running back totaled 1,500 yards on the ground, almost 300 through the air, receiving, I guess I should say, not through the air. Makes it sound like he threw the ball. He did not. He caught the ball. Just under 20 touchdowns total for him. So lots of impact players here. I think Ohio State has the edge if you just look at impact players because of those guys that I mentioned. But obviously we know what Clemson as a team is capable of.
Yeah, Clemson is still a reigning national champion. They still have Dabo Swinney, who is certainly a top two coach right now in college football. I mean, him and Nick Saban, you could flip him around year after year. Obviously, Dabo probably has the advantage this year. I don't know if there's really anybody else I'd throw up there. Urban Meyer, if he decides to go back to another team. But, I mean, Dabo has been doing this with Clemson for so many years. It's like the ACC is kind of all right. And then everyone just accepts Clemson as this otherworldly being that's like, they're nowhere close to the same level as them. And yes, they don't have any Heisman finalists, but Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, T. Higgins, these are all impact players on offense that, similar to this whole Clemson team, do not get enough credit throughout the season. Like you said, Trevor Lawrence has championship experience. He won it last year against an Alabama team who most, I believe, thought were going to win. It's kind of a similar situation here. This Ohio State team probably has more talent, but Ryan Day is a first-year head coach, has not had tremendous college football playoff experience. He was under Urban Meyer before, but this is his first time leading the charge. And yes, Justin Fields is doing great. Chase Young's doing great. Chase Young will be a top five pick. It's just they don't have quite the experience that Clemson has. I think this will be an excellent game. This is what I thought should have been the championship game if Ohio State would have learned how to be better against Wisconsin. They'd probably be the one because these two teams are undefeated. I think it's probably the first time we've seen two undefeated teams in the college football playoff. Usually most years we see at least multiple teams with one loss, if not all of them. So for there to be three undefeateds this year is kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, you know how much I like LSU, so I never would have said that this is my final.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it'll be a better game than LSU and Oklahoma, although I do like Oklahoma as well. If there's any takeaway, though, from both the NFL and college, it's that this should be a very exciting postseason, an entire bowl season, of course, for college football. I think we're going to move now into Major League Baseball, but before we do, I have some breaking news here. The Sharks just fired head coach Peter DeBoer within the last half an hour. 15-16-2 to start the season for the San Jose Sharks. He is done as their head coach.
Throw him under the ring with Montgomery from Dallas. John Hines, Mike Babcock, coaches getting
it's a tough time. It's a tough time to be a coach. All right, moving into baseball, where teams are not letting players go so much as they are bringing them in, and there are some record-breaking deals being dished out here early in the week. So let's start with Monday, when we saw the highest-paid pitcher in terms of annual average ever. It was short-lived, but Steven Strasburg at 7 years and $245 million to stay with the Washington Nationals claimed that title for all of 2 days. Full no-trade clause, some incentives in there. He was the World Series MVP, so certainly a key player to bring back for the Washington Nationals.
And he opted out of his contract, too. He still had a few more seasons with the Nationals.
Four years, I believe, and $100 million is what was left on the original.
He was making $25 a year, which... I mean, he deserves more than that, obviously, winning the World Series MVP. He's been nothing short of excellent for them the whole time he's been with them. He deserved an extension. I'm glad to see that they gave it to him. 7 years, $245, that's a lot of money. But we're kind of forgetting about that until last night when classic Pirates pitcher Garrett Cole went to Houston, did phenomenal with them. World-class level, stuff you've never seen in a pitcher before. So what does he do? Gets money you've never seen before given to a pitcher. The New York Yankees gave him 9 years, $324 million to come pitch in the pinstripes and try to bring a World Series back to the Bronx. Has an opt-out clause after 5 years, though, so halfway through, I guess, if this Yankees experiment isn't working out, or if he thinks he's worth more than $36 a year, he can opt out. But $324 million, that's just a ludicrous amount of money.
Yeah, he's the first pitcher to hit the $300 million mark. This is the second largest contract we have ever seen come out of free agency in Major League Baseball, behind only that of Bryce Harper from last season. A little bit of a different offseason here. Obviously, pitchers are taking the spotlight as opposed to hitters like we saw last year, but we're also seeing deals get done.
Last year,
we came back from our Christmas break in January, and we were still looking for answers, and we were looking for answers into the spring almost.
Harper and Machado took from forever.
And here we are, not even Christmas time yet, and for two fan bases, it kind of is like Christmas time. Nationals get their guy back. Yankees get the guy that I think will make the difference for them. I mean,
you should.
It was them and the Astros really at the top of the American League this year, and when you take a player like Garrett Cole from one straight to the other, that tips the scales in your favor, not to mention all of the other things, distractions going on with the Astros, in addition to their payroll issues. They have a lot of guys that need a lot of money, and probably not enough to pay them all, so certainly some significant changes here in the American League.
It just hit me. It's Marian Hossa all over again. Does excellent with one team in the postseason, doesn't quite get the championship, joins the team that beat them in hopes of getting a championship. Yankees are going to be World Series runner-ups then, right?
I don't think that's quite the
logic. It's not quite the same logic, but it's very similar logic.
It'd be the same if the Yankees beat the Astros, but the Astros the Yankees.
Well,
so
either way, though,
it's a long
stealing right.
Though,
it's close enough. It just hit me. It wasn't well thought out. It's fine. But either way, a lot of money. The Yankees get their guy. He's going to be significantly less hairy, though, than he was with Houston.
That's true.
They got their whole beard and long hair policy, old things. Either way, though, good for them. A few more minor deals. Pirates got their guy. No, they didn't.
They signed
minor league guy, Hector Noyce. I just wanted to throw them into the mix.
Yeah, I know
they did sign Don Kelly, though, to be the bench coach with, yes. I think. That's fine. He was good with Detroit. He's from Pittsburgh. Good guy to have around the team. That's whatever. Jordan Lyles was with the Pirates, did okay, got traded to Milwaukee, got paid now with the Rangers, 2 years, $16 million. Pretty good for them. Howie Kendrick, the reason why the Nationals didn't lose in the division series, he's getting 1 year, $6.25 million to stay in D.C. Michael Pineda likes to get suspended for pine tar and for steroids. Well, he's also going to make $20 million over the next 2 years staying with the Twins. Chicago White Sox acquired Nomar Mazara from the Texas Rangers for Steel Walker. Walker is some random prospect who has not really a lot going for him. Mazara is a proven starter, which will certainly help the White Sox lineup as they add piece by piece. They're getting better. This is a good offseason
slowly,
for them.
But yes, they are.
If I was a White Sox fan, I would be encouraged by what they're doing. It's not quite the level of Strasburg or Cole, but it's something good from them, though.
Sure, it gets the job done. Tommy Pham is on his way to the Padres from the Tampa Bay Rays.
That was a big one.
He goes for Hunter Renfroe. Of course, there were other players involved in that, but those are the two big names. Talked about the Twins. They also signed catcher Alex Avila. He comes over there.
He's a veteran.
Zach Cozart goes traded from the Angels to the Giants. I don't know that he's as relevant as he once was, but it's still a name.
It freed up space for Cole.
Sure.
Not to sign there.
Yeah, yeah. Nationals also re-signed Gomes in addition to Kendrick, and the Phillies got Didi Gregorius 1 year, $14 million.
A reunion with his former manager, Joe Girardi, too.
That's true. There you go. So that's a quick update in Major League Baseball, of course, the big one, Steven Strasburg, and the bigger one, Garrett Cole.
Biggest free agent on the market is still Anthony Rendon. He's kind of taking a backseat to these pitchers, though. I think the pitchers have been the talk of baseball before the postseason meeting ended. So look for the spotlight to come to Rendon. Hopefully we'll have news on him when we come back. But if we don't be surprised seeing how long it took everybody last year.
Don't worry. There's football in the meantime. We'll get there with baseball.
We will. And one thing that we also still have is our weekly college basketball update, where we decide to tell you who didn't want to win this week. And once again, it's the number one team. Louisville Cardinals, they ascended to number one by virtue of everybody else in front of them losing, and they themselves are suffering the same fate as they lost by 13 to Texas Tech last night. Texas Tech is unranked this season, but they are the runner-ups last year to the national championship, so they're clearly not a bad team. They have experience, but it's still another unranked team to knock off an AP number one. It's impressive for how many have lost this year so far.
And again, for Louisville, it was at home, which also seems to be a trend. Just for the record, this is at least the second, maybe the third week in a row that I don't think we were going to talk about this.
We weren't.
And then teams just can't win. They just keep losing, and we're like, well, I guess we'll go that direction again. So while we're here, Penn State Nittany Lions have been impacting the Big Ten in some way here recently. Not that the Nittany Lions are the team to watch, but they took a pretty bad loss to Ohio State, 106-74, which says something about the number three team in the country, which I think
probably the number one team now.
A little bit. Yeah, probably. They also then went and beat number four Maryland, 76-69, which is the bigger one because obviously Maryland will now tumble. And they had just barely beaten Illinois, 59-58, Maryland, that is. So these last couple games for the Terrapins have not looked overly impressive at all, while Ohio State is certainly working their way up. One other game was kind of big recently is Duke got a win at number 11, Michigan State. It was 87-75. Duke currently number 7. Michigan State goes down to number 16.
Baylor played Butler the other day. Butler was at number 18. Baylor was 11. So Baylor's doing good things in basketball and football now. Butler was undefeated, but you know how it goes. They lost to Baylor. So once again, another undefeated team to fall. So as the AP 25 currently stands, we have Ohio State, Auburn, San Diego State are the three undefeateds we got in there. I'm not
just
sure.
Just like we all thought it would be.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State was good a decade ago. Clearly, they're good this season. I mean, they're beating big teams. They beat UNC. They destroyed Penn State, who's not a bad team this year. So good things are happening there. But this isn't the end of number one's losing.
No, it's not. And that's good for me because I predicted, honestly, I don't even remember. We'll revisit that at some point.
Eight, I want to say.
Was it eight? I thought eight as well.
I think
so
eight.
Either way, I thought we'd have lots of number ones based on what I saw early. That trend has continued. And we continue to see who goes through the revolving door that is normally in the bottom five in college football.
It
happens to be
at
the top five in college basketball, but that's okay. The madness is starting early.
That it is. And we are going to take our break right now, but coming up, a year in review, a decade in review, mixing up a little bit, but as the last show of 2019, the last show of the decade, we got to throw it in there. So please stay tuned. True, you're a star in my head. You that need to raise war in my friends. You're so bad when I need to be time, but I don't want war with you or my friends. You're my best friend. You're my best friend. He said true, but we can party, yeah, yeah. Because true, you're my best friend. All the way around, I'm loyal. I got money on me. I got money in my pocket, I'm loyal. Pain goes away when I'm tizzy. Pain goes away when you're with me. Even when your shadow's a little risky, it's all under control. Just don't let this go. We spent the last 3 summers on the road. Spent the summer on the road. Ring it on, living in the road.
guitar in my head.
Is it true?
True, no need for race war with my friends, no, no. True, you're so bad, we don't need to pretend. But I don't want war with you or my friends. You're my best, yeah.
I'm loyal. Pain goes away when I'm dizzy. Pain goes away when you're with me. Even when your shuttle's a little risky, it's all under control.
Welcome back to the show, Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. We talked about a lot of stuff that's coming up, and now we're going to shift gears here for the rest of the show and talk about what we have witnessed in recent years. This year is where we're going to start. It is the end of 2019, and it is the end of the 2010s.
Pop the champagne.
It is time to reminisce on what was in sports in the last year first, and then we'll go to the last decade. So let's start in 2019.
So the beginning of the year kind of saw us similar trajectories that we saw in years past. Clemson won another national championship in college football. First team in the modern era to go 15-0. The last team was Penn in 1897, which,
wow,
that's not real. I mean, teams don't play 15 games often.
Right.
And to win all 15, impressive. So the first team in the modern era to do that. Second title in three seasons for Dabo and Clemson. NFL, we saw the same story as we've been seeing. The Patriots, third straight Super Bowl appearance, and they have won their sixth title. They knocked off the Rams. Tie the Steelers for the most Super Bowls in the NFL. So those were the things that... Oh, and I'll throw the Masters in there too. Tiger Woods won the Masters again. First major since 2008. First Masters title since 2005. A return to glory for sure for a guy who had battled a lot through many years. Finally came back to the peak of the world. And the Masters is the most impressive, I think, of all four of the tournaments. If you're going to choose to win a major, the Masters is probably going to be the one you choose. So really good to see him come back. That was the big moment. Then pretty much after that, it was all a bunch of firsts. In NCAA men's, Virginia won their first basketball title ever. The Blues won their first Stanley Cup. The Raptors won their first NBA championship. Later in the fall, the Nationals won their first World Series. So besides the Patriots, most of these teams were seen for the first time doing really good things, which is better. It's a little bit more dynamic than we've seen in years past.
Boy, you took a lot of the good stuff here right off the bat, but of course there's plenty of other good stuff as well. The Daytona 500 went to Denny Hamlin this year. On the women's side of college basketball, the Baylor Bears defeated the Notre Dame Fighting Irish 82-81 in a very good game. Let's see what else we have. Oh, horse racing.
Horse racing?
Yes.
What do you got for me there?
The Kentucky Derby. Country House was the winner. Maximum Security, if you remember, crossed the finish line first.
Yeah, I forgot about
and
that.
And was disqualified. So I would argue, outside of maybe the Triple Crown, which I'm sure we'll talk about later as we review the decade, that is probably one of the most memorable moments in recent history as it relates to horse racing. Granted, most people pay attention to horse racing three times a year, but the Kentucky Derby is the most prevalent, huge stage for something like that to take place.
You know, I forgot about that because usually, as we watch the Penguins progress through the postseason, we get bombarded with Kentucky Derby advertisements. The Penguins fell out earlier this year. I paid less attention to NBC's media. Fell out of my brain. I also don't care about horse racing very much. But hey, to see a horse cross the finish line first, this horse doesn't know what's going on. He's getting disqualified and he has no say in the matter. He's just doing what the jockey says. Either way, it is remarkable. don't see it very often. And it was something that made me say, huh, would you look at that?
Yes, very interesting there. Boxing, we had something really pretty big happen, and I'm not a boxing person, so I probably won't even do this justice, but this was over the summer, I think July. Andy Ruiz Jr. defeated Anthony Joshua in the seventh round, one of the biggest upsets in boxing history. Just no offense, but if you just look at the two guys, one of them looks like a boxer and the other one doesn't, and it is, I think, one of the upper classes, but Andy Ruiz is not one of the... He's not what you would picture if you look at a boxer. Not quite as fit. Anthony Joshua is. Anthony Joshua was undefeated coming into the match. So kind of a different story if you just look at it on the surface. And of course, as not a boxing person, I do just look at it on the surface. But from what I read, one of the biggest upsets ever. And I remember people making a big deal out about that. Making a big deal about that when it happened. So that was one that I felt was worth noting.
I don't even know if I pay attention to that very much. Oh, Andy Ruiz, he's like that bigger, heavyset guy, right?
Right, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that's
it's
good.
It's different. It's interesting. Soccer, there were some big ones. The U.S. men lost to Mexico in the CONCACAF Gold Cup
US
final.
U.S. men suck.
Well, yeah, but to get there was at least an improvement after
year
the debacle
in and year
of 2018.
Out, they lose to everyone.
The women, however... Not the case.
No,
they got a win
good.
In the World Cup, 2-0. They defeated the Netherlands in the final. Coming back here, NASCAR, Kyle Busch was the champion in their playoff series. In golf, Rory McIlroy took home the FedEx Cup. A couple other big events in tennis. Novak Djokovic and Simona Halep won at Wimbledon, one of the bigger tennis tournaments of the year. And in cycling, the Tour de France went to Egan Bernal, I think is how I'm going to say that. So... Just some, not necessarily names that you know, but events that you know.
Oh, AAF started and ended,
too. Oh, the AAF.
Yeah, that was a good AAF. Upstart football league. The XFL was announced. They have not started yet. But the AAF just had no money, had a few weeks, and that was it. We do see Garrett Gilbert as the backup to Baker Mayfield, though, so some good has come out of it. Cam Kelly's a safety for the Steelers. He was in the AAF, so it helped a little bit, but it kind of crashed and burned. Pretty quickly.
Yeah, I liked myself some AAF, and I totally forgot about it until you mentioned that. It's one I would have liked to have seen had some more success than it did.
The Women's World Cup team, you said they won. They dominated. They scored 18 goals in the group stage, led up 0. They won the round of 16, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, all 2-1. The last stage, they won 2-0. So probably the most dominant World Cup they've had. They really weren't ever an underdog. I mean, for good reason. They were just... excellent throughout the whole thing. Puts the men to shame even more, which, well, I mean, the men suck and the women don't, so that's just the way U.S. soccer's going.
Highlight of 2019 in sports for you. Did you have a moment or a couple moments that really stood out to you or that you enjoyed more than the rest?
Like for me personally, or just like one I think is monument? I mean, I think Tiger winning the Masters is the biggest moment of the season for the year.
Yeah.
But I like seeing Kawhi get a ring, get an MVP. He's my favorite player in the league, and to see him do really well was really nice. Biggest letdown was probably seeing the Rams put up 3 in the Super Bowl, I'd have to say.
No, yeah, those are both
good. As far as major events go.
Yeah, the Super Bowl was kind of hyped up for the offensive side of the ball with
the Patriots had a good
offense that the Rams had, and of course, Tom Brady. That's a good one. Tiger Woods is my personal favorite. I've always been a Tiger fan. I think I'm a little bit of a bigger golf fan than most people are, so that the Masters in general carries a little bit more weight for me, I think. So seeing that one was pretty big. Kawhi's a really good one, though, too. And just seeing teams win for the first time.
So many of them, too.
And I mean, these are, you know, the Nationals and the Blues. Like, those aren't teams that I have any rooting interest in. I mean, same for the Raptors, but I think to see... the Golden State, not to see them struggle, but to see somebody give them a run for their money and actually succeed that isn't single-handedly LeBron James was a nice change. And it was nice to see an NBA Finals that didn't feature the exact two same teams.
It was the first year I've watched every game of the Finals ever.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Toronto do well. It was good to not see... I mean, credit to LeBron for being there and all, but it was... We need something different.
Like, if you're not a Golden State or a Cleveland fan, it's gets old. And so seeing something different was very nice.
I got one for you. 32nd NHL team was announced, Seattle.
Yes, that was very true.
That was new.
It's a good one.
Not around yet.
Right.
But, you know, they got the framework there. So that got anything else for this year? Anything else written down at least? Maybe something will come to your mind later.
No, but I'm sure more will come up as we continue to go. But 2019 was a pretty big year. I think the biggest moments were the moments you would expect. I mean, there were good things, smaller things that kind of fly under the radar. But to see some new teams win and to see Tiger get back on top and things of that nature made for a very exciting year in sports at sports biggest moments.
Absolutely. So while we saw a lot of differences this year, the decade as a whole, though, I kind of looked at it to see, oh, goodness, all these teams were so dominant. Every major sport, NCAA football and basketball, NASCAR, NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, Champions League, MLS, golf even, that's 10 different sports I've listed. All of them in the 10 years saw repeat winners in each of their things. The most important one to me, though, I'm going to point out before we get into it, New York Yankees did not win a single title this decade. I think that's the first time since like the 70s, maybe the 60s, 50s. I don't know the last time it was that they didn't win a World Series. I'm going to look it up real quick. But they didn't win one this decade, which is remarkable.
Yeah. And we're going to kind of go in order here by year, but obviously we're going to get off track at some times. So to get off track right
80s.
Off the start. Okay, there you go. To go with what you're saying is dynasties. For me, were a big thing here.
Yeah.
College football, Alabama is absolutely a dynasty. To me, in my opinion, I don't know where you are on this, 3 championships is what it takes to be a dynasty.
Within 5 years.
I think the time frame depends on what you do in between.
Kinda.
If it's, to me, if you are dominant, even in the years that you don't win, I will let that stretch. Otherwise, I think 5 is a good number. But definitely Alabama. Definitely the Patriots, and I think you could argue how far that extends and whether or not that goes the whole way back to the last decade. Regardless, though, I think they classify. The Chicago Blackhawks in the NHL won in 2010, 2013, and 2015. That's a dynasty. The San Francisco Giants won in 10, 12, and 14. Golden State took home 3 in 4 years. Am I missing one?
Jimmy Johnson's won 3 NASCAR championships.
Okay.
2 of them were, so he won 6 in a row. 2 of them were at the end of that, and then 1 was a few years later. So,
okay,
I think that would classify under your threshold there. LA Galaxy won 3 MLS titles in, like, I think it was a 5-year span at the beginning of the decade.
Okay.
Seattle's won 2 now. They're on their way. They're not quite there yet, but they're on their way at least.
And I mean, like you said, just about repeat winners is, if you look at the NHL, the Penguins and the Kings are the other two teams that really made some noise. The Bruins have gotten there 3 times. So even when it's not a dynasty per se, there's still teams that are there that are the one same teams that are the ones making the noise year in and year out. You can make that kind of a case for Clemson and college football.
Yeah, I have them included.
Yeah. So not a dynasty, I wouldn't call them, but they're knocking on the door.
Yeah, this year, I mean, if they win this year, they are absolutely a dynasty.
Yes.
Especially seeing how they never had the sustained success up until a few years ago. Like, pretty much since 2008, Alabama has been a mainstay powerhouse in football. Oh, I forgot to put down the NCAA segment we did earlier. This will be the first time that Alabama is not in a BCS bowl or a college football playoff game since the 2010 season.
It's insane.
They played the Capital One Bowl that year against Michigan State. They were 8-3, finished 9-3 on the season, so they weren't that strong that year, but they won the championship the year before that, and I think they were around 2 years before that, and they've been basically a top 10 echelon type bowl game or championship game since then. So clearly they have sustained all of the legacy. Would you say they're the biggest dynasty this decade, or would you give that title to someone else?
Oh boy.
Them, Golden State, would you put anybody else up in that conversation, or is everybody else kind of on a different tier?
Boy, that's interesting. You know what? That might be a fun thing to do, look at next semester in one of our top takeovers or something along those lines. If I had to pick right now, not looking at numbers and not thinking too much about it, I'd probably say Golden State just because of the time frame in which they won their 3 titles, the dominance with setting a record of 73 wins in that stretch, and the fact that in the 1 year they didn't win, they lost in game 7 of the finals. I don't know that it's to find a stretch that dominant
5 straight
that
seasons.
Short is, but you could also make the argument that a longer dynasty with championships more spread out is more impressive. So I think it's just a matter of how you look at it.
I know, I think off the top of my head, I would say Golden State too. Like you said, the level of dominance they've had, they were doing things you haven't seen NBA teams do before. I mean, yes, Jordan's Bulls in the 90s were phenomenal. They also played against, in my opinion, less strong competition than the Warriors did. The West has been, for many years, the best conference in the NBA. They've had excellent teams. I mean, essentially, the Spurs dynasty they had for so many years was ended by the Warriors, because the Spurs made back-to-back championship appearances, lost the first one, won the second one, which was their fifth of all time. And then from that point forward, it's been Golden State.
Yeah.
This year will end their dynasty, but I don't – well, it will pause it at least. They have the potential next year to resume it again. They're getting pretty much all their pieces back, whereas college is a little more different because you get 4 years at most with your players on the team, so it's not always the same people doing things.
Right.
Yes, it's similar cast year after year, but it's not always, you know, Steph Curry doing it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's a very interesting conversation. Let's go back and start in 2010. I think one of the biggest moments, if not the biggest moment, was Sidney Crosby in Vancouver winning the gold medal in overtime against Team USA. To win it for Team Canada in overtime, I think was one of the most exciting moments of 2010.
If you were a Canadian, you were beaming with pride and maple syrup.
Yes, that's true.
But yeah, I did forget about that. I thought about throwing something about the Olympics on here, but then I was like, well, I don't really like the Olympics, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you're not an Olympics fan, which is interesting.
I'm not. I'm a Sidney Crosby fan, though, so that was huge. That was a great way to kick off the decade. That gave him gold medal, Stanley Cup, Conn Smythe, all of those things are now under his resume.
Yes. Some other big ones. The New Orleans Saints won their first Super Bowl with a second half onside kick, which is one of the riskier moves we've seen in a Super Bowl or really in any championship game that I can think of. The Chicago Blackhawks won their first Stanley Cup of the now dynasty that we referred to, ending the longest drought at the time in NHL history. It had been since 1961, since they had won a cup prior to 2010. And of course, LeBron James and his decision to leave Cleveland and head to Miami.
It started 8 straight years in the finals. I wonder if he's the biggest dynasty himself. Would you call him a dynasty?
No.
He made 8 straight finals, 4 with the Heat, 4 with the Cavs. That we're never going to see that again.
Yeah, I have a tough time calling an individual a dynasty in a team sport.
I know, so no. But okay. Best player of the decade?
Yes.
In everything?
I don't know.
Most dominant player of the decade?
I mean, yeah, probably. I don't think you could compare 8 straight finals. I don't think you could say any one player was more dominant than he was.
And he was taking... The Heat team he joined was a good team.
The Cavs...
That was a bunch of bums.
Yeah.
And he was doing it all himself.
And Kyrie for a little bit, but that's not the point.
No, yeah, the point is LeBron made the big decision to leave Believeland and join the Heat, and he's never looked back.
Anything else you have different in 2010? Anything big there?
So I kind of looked at as a whole decade. I didn't go year by year like you did. So I'll speak on what you have.
Sure. 2011, NBA lockout. Season was shortened to 66 games that season.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, one of two lockouts that we would see in the decade.
Yes.
In professional sports, Bounty Gate for the Saints hit early in the decade. I believe it was 2011.
Was that a pun on hits?
It was. What's that?
You said hit early in the decade. Was that a pun on?
Actually,
their
it wasn't.
Hits?
No. Oh, but yeah, not a great one considering the Bounty Gate.
Well.
But you know, whatever. NBA, Dirk and the Mavs knocked off LeBron and his Miami team. The Miami team everybody thought would win.
They were underdogs.
And instead, Dirk got his championship there in 2011. 2011, I didn't think was quite as monumental. Of course, I guarantee we're going to miss stuff because there's just so much to cover. And I would argue at this point we weren't as knowledgeable about what was going on, paying as close attention. So
that was the second straight year the Rangers lost in the World Series. There was a lot. Yeah, they lost to the Giants and lost to the Giants and the Cardinals. I forget what order it was, but that makes me think though. There's a lot of teams that made championships.
Yeah, you're right. Because then the Tigers were 12 and 13, right?
Were they 13 too? No, they weren't 13. 13 was Cardinals and Red
Sox.
You're right. But yeah, the Rangers lost 2 years in a row, which kind of gave the theme of teams make finals many years and lose. The Cavs lost several years. The Seahawks made it and then lost. The Broncos made it and lost. The Patriots threw some losses in there. So.
Yeah.
They kind of sparked the whole, we're going to make it and lose. You alluded to the Bruins already doing that. So a lot of teams had really high success, just not the highest level.
2012, we saw the NHL lockout, which resulted
more memorable
in a 48-game season, a little bit longer there. A couple of fun phenomenons. Lynn Sanity and Tebow mania.
Who?
Tim Tebow.
Oh, that was the year. Was that the year that they knocked us off in the wild card game?
Yes. Yes. So some interesting ones there. The butt fumble. Mark Sanchez on Thanksgiving Day. New York Jets. The butt fumble. That's a good one.
Infamy.
The fail Mary puts an end to the replacement refs, which is just a
replacement
bad,
refs. They were
just
terrible.
A bad time. I believe this was when the college football playoff was decided upon, not when it was put into place, but when they decided that that was going to be what they do moving forward. Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown in baseball for the first time since 1967. Pat Summitt, a great women's basketball coach for the Tennessee Volunteers, retired in 2012. And Lance Armstrong, fall from grace with all of his different scandals and whatnot. That took place also in 2012.
I would love to know what the fall off in cycling following has been from Lance Armstrong's doping allegations and truths to now. I mean, I never cared about cycling in the first place. It's a very niche sport, but everybody knows who Lance Armstrong is. That's a name you know. I couldn't tell you a single person who cycles right now.
Nope. I named the winner of the Tour de France a couple minutes ago, and I couldn't do it again. Yeah. So, yeah, a big hit there. I saw a theme here in these kind of years where there were some not good things going on, because again, in 2013, the MLB Biogenesis scandal.
Yeah.
And not that I don't have a whole lot to say about that, but I mean, it's a big deal. It was not a good time for Major League Baseball. And to pair that with Lance Armstrong, and to pair that with the lockouts, was not great. What was great, if you're a Boston Bruins fan, was the comeback Game 7 against the Maple Leafs. Nathan Horton. Down 4-1 in the third period, won the game in overtime. Probably one of the most memorable games, individual games of the decade, at least if you're a hockey fan. Hometown, the Pittsburgh Pirates, won their first playoff game since 1992.
Made their first playoff since then as well.
Yes, they did.
And
won the wild,
ended their drought.
Won the wild card game and was within a game of knocking off the Cardinals in the division series.
And as ironic as it is, Garrett Cole was the reason we did not win that game.
Yeah.
He was chosen to start over A.J. Burnett.
Yeah, that is true. For the Yankees, Mariano Rivera retired in 2013.
Was it really that long?
I believe so.
6 years. Man.
I believe so.
I mean, yeah, but
yeah,
man.
I know. That's, wow. Yeah. 2014, Derek Jeter. He also stepped away from the game. Walk-off hit in his final home game at Yankee Stadium. A-Rod, another Yankee. Suspension. Full season suspension, if you remember going back to that Biogenesis scandal.
He was on the path to break Bonds' record, too.
Yes.
That suspension ended him.
Another one of the many gates that we've seen in the NFL, deflate gate for the Patriots in the title AFC title game against the Colts.
That was really that long ago.
Yeah. They've had so many different scandals throughout the decade that, it does feel like just yesterday. And the Odell catch, probably one of the most memorable plays of the decade, individual plays, was that catch against the Cowboys, correct? I think it was against the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah.
Regardless, spectacular.
It's great. As you bring up all these things, the pictures of them are flashing in my head. Hopefully for you guys at home, too.
2015, the Dez catch, not a catch, whole situation in the playoffs.
That was against the Lions, wasn't it? Packers. It was Packers.
Yeah, that was the Packers.
There was a lot of bad catch problems in the NFL this
decade. Of the many issues that we've seen throughout the decade. FIFA and their whole bribery situation.
Sepp Blatter.
Yes, not a good look there either. Ronda Rousey, if you can remember how dominant she was early in the decade,
she
KO'd in 2015, and that was kind of the decline of her.
The KO of her career.
Yes, pretty much.
She's in WWE now, which, whatever, do what you want, but ain't the same as MMA.
No. Another Triple Crown in horse racing. American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, I believe, for the first time since 1975 is what I
want
to say.
It was the 70s. I know that much.
And then I have the Blackhawks dynasty noted here. Obviously mentioned them already there. 2016, Leicester City won the Premier League, which is just kind of a weird thing to have happen. Very small team, small payroll to get that job done against some of the powerhouses in the Premier League was a remarkable feat.
Probably the biggest underdog to ever win the Premier League, I would say.
LeBron and the Cavs, speaking of underdogs, took home the NBA title against a 73-9 Golden State Warriors
team. Would you say the biggest underdog to win the NBA title?
Oh, I'm sure. Down 3-1 in the finals against the best team in regular season history.
Ever.
Yes. Absolutely. Chicago Cubs won the World Series. See, now things are starting to look up here a little bit in 2016. The Cubs ended a World Series drought that dated back over 100 years.
Yes, 1908.
That's insane. Simone Biles, dominant at the Rio Olympics. I know you're not an Olympics person, but Simone Biles in gymnastics,
you know who she is.
Is great, was great. 2016 is where we really saw her shine in Rio. 2017... NFL, that's when the whole kneeling situation went on. Colin Kaepernick led the way on that.
Still trying.
Have whatever opinion of that you want to have, but that was significant that year. The Browns went 0-16, which is insignificant, but also very significant at the same time. Again, hometown, the Pittsburgh Penguins repeat for the first time in the NHL since 1998. Pretty significant.
First time in salary cap era.
That's right. Patriots came back from down 28-3 to beat the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Most people won't like that very much, but hey.
It's monumental.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Just why it has to be them.
Also monumental in 2018, Chloe Kim in the Olympics won gold in the halfpipe at 17 years old for Team USA. Just kind of a crazy.
I think that's the first one you've said I've never heard of.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, look that one up. That was a good one. Number 16, UMBC wins. First number 16 seed to win in March Madness.
Over Virginia.
Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals finally get their Stanley Cup. Obviously, they've had a lot of good teams over the years.
He deserved it.
Ovechkin's the best goal scorer, in my opinion, of this generation, but
probably
definitely
history.
Of this decade.
Of history.
And the Golden Knights, in their very first season, reached the NHL Finals.
First expansion team in any major sport to ever do that.
Which is just incredible, the run that they went on. That's my list. Again, I guarantee I missed a lot of stuff, and I'm sure you're missing a lot of stuff too, because there was just so many things happening. But I guess my biggest takeaway just from looking at this list is we had a lot of kind of tough times, if you will, early in the decade in sports with different lockouts, with different scandals, and some of that continues now as we see the coaching situation in the NHL, or as we see the Patriots spying on the Bengals. Like, stuff like that continues to pop up, and it always will pop up. But I think as you get into 2016, you see some different teams winning. You see some new things happening. We talked about the teams that won in 2019 that were new. So a lot of dynasties in this decade, a lot of controversy in this decade. But like any decade and like any year in sports, it certainly had its moments where it really makes an impact on people, and I think we're seeing that continue now and will continue into the next decade.
Yeah, even Tiger Woods, I think, is one you can bring up into that same thing. At the beginning of the decade, that's when his whole marriage thing came out. Yeah, he cheated on his wife or whatever. That was bad. 2017, as recently as that, he was arrested for DUI. He was under all sorts of painkillers and stuff.
Yep.
He really went through tough times.
Horrible.
Came out on top in the end. A few more things of just good mention, not necessarily as bad,
yeah,
or serious.
Sure.
NCAA men saw a lot of different champions, but also a lot of the same. Duke won twice, UConn won twice, Villanova won twice. Not really any dynasties with any of them.
The
but
Nova buzzer beater, that's another good one.
That's a big one, yeah, over UNC. That was the first time they won since the 80s. UConn and Duke have won more often than that.
Well, and yeah, UConn on the women's side's incredible.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even mention. Yeah, they were on
another dynasty.
They won over 100 games in a row at one point, which I don't think you're going to see that again. That's just incredible. You mentioned, yeah, I think you mentioned all the teams winning a lot. Red Sox won twice too. That was good for them. Kind
that's
of
true.
Mini dynasty. Spain, Germany, and France were World Cup champions in men's this decade. Real Madrid and Barcelona, two La Liga teams who play soccer in Spain, dominated the Champions League. They won five times combined. I mean, like you said, a lot more to have.
Sports betting was legalized. That was another big one I forgot
about.
Sports
betting was legalized. And most important thing, in fall of 2018, sports takeover began.
That is very true. Very monumental, certainly for us at least. And of course, there are plenty of other fantastic things, but we are running out of time. We do have quick picks and bold predictions to get to for the last time in 2019. So let's go ahead and move into that. Number 17, we're going to go to bowl games here in quick
only
picks.
Bowl games.
Number 17, Memphis, and number 10, Penn State. I think that the Nittany Lions are a more tested team. I'm going to go with them.
I'm going with Penn State as well. They lost to Kentucky last year for absolutely no reason whatsoever. I don't think they're going to lose to another team like that. I have Penn State. Number 1, LSU plays number 4, Oklahoma, in the first round of the college football playoff. Oklahoma, please give your best shot, but when Joe Burrow is in a national championship game, don't be surprised. Go Tigers.
College football champion LSU Tigers. It's coming.
Right.
They're winning this game. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 3, Clemson, for the right to lose to LSU in the championship game. Ohio State Buckeyes. I think they have too many individual weapons.
They do have a lot of weapons. I'm going with them. But if they lose, Clemson will win the title. Either way, the winner of this game is going to win the title.
LSU.
We got Minnesota making their first appearance in a New Year's Six Bowl. They got their number 18. They play number 12, Auburn, two teams who have lost to a few teams, won a lot of good ones. Auburn has lost to some really good teams, though. They've also beaten Alabama. They can beat Minnesota. I got the Tigers here.
I have Auburn as well. Strong team and a strong SEC. Number 13, Alabama. Number 14, Michigan. I like Bama. I think they're more consistent. I think Saban's one of the best coaches in the country. I think they'll take care of business.
Wonder if this will be the final nail in the coffin for Jim Harbaugh. Either way, looks like Nick Saban has another bowl game victory under his belt with this one. Number 6, Oregon. Number 8, Wisconsin. A Rose Bowl that I'm really excited for. I think these are two very evenly matched teams. Like I said, when I picked Oregon last week against Utah, we would have picked them if they didn't lose to Arizona State a few weeks ago. I'm going to pick them here regardless. They're a very good team. They moved all the way up to number 6 after knocking off Utah. Wisconsin, they have had their trouble against Illinois. I like the Ducks.
Yeah, Wisconsin's kind of inconsistent, so I'm going to go with Oregon as well. Number 5, Georgia. Number 7, Baylor. I'm going with the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, they're a borderline playoff team, and the look on your face tells me that we just matched all 7 picks.
We absolutely did. I got Georgia here as well.
Might be the first time we've ever done that.
It is the first time, so we'll have the same poor record probably whenever some of these teams lose. Georgia lost last year to Texas in the Sugar Bowl after being snubbed in their opinion because they didn't really care to play. I think this year they deserve not to play in the college football playoff. They deserve to beat Baylor, though. Go Bulldogs in that one. Moving into bowl predictions, LSU-Oklahoma will combine for at least 90 points. These are two high-powered offenses. Could be 50-plus for LSU, 30-plus for Oklahoma. I'm not saying who's getting what, but 90 points on the scoreboard.
Yikes. I'm going to say Gerrit Cole will win the Cy Young in 2020. He just got his money. He arguably could have won it this year. I think he will take care of business next year. I'm not ready to say Yankees for the World Series because I thought about that too.
It's a bold one.
I'll just go with Cy Young.
You can save that for the MLB predictions.
I'll go with Cy Young.
I'm going to move to NFL for this one. So there's 12 teams currently in playoff positions. A few teams on the outside looking in. At least one of the teams on the outside looking in as it currently stands will be in the playoffs.
Okay.
Could be anyone. I'm not going to say who specifically. Chicago, LA, Tennessee, those are probably the only three it could be. So one of those three in the playoffs this year.
All right. NFL for me, the final four teams when we come back will be Baltimore and New England on the AFC side, New Orleans, and I don't know who to take. So I'm going to take my Minnesota Vikings also to be there in the NFC. Why not?
Sure. That's okay. No NFC West, though. Wanted a snub. Last but not least, I got NBA. Milwaukee Bucks are 21-3. People don't talk about them enough. They really should. They will play 18 games while we are on break. I think their record when we return will be at least 35-7. They could have more than 35 wins, but I think over the course of these 18, 14-4 will be their mark.
Okay. I'll talk about the Bucks if you want to talk about the Bucks. I'm going to say when we come back, they will be the top team in the NBA, and in the NHL, the top team will be the Boston Bruins. Both of those teams are kind of already at the top, but they're right there in a group. So I think they're going to separate themselves just enough to be at the top by themselves.
I think whoever is at the bottom of the NHL when we come back, you got to look out for.
Yeah, no kidding. St. Louis Blues.
I don't think Detroit's making noise this year, though.
No, I don't think so either. We're done making noise, too, for this year. That is all that we have for tonight. That is all that we have for 2019. It's been a great year for us, calendar year, and a great semester. Thank you guys for tuning in throughout the entirety of the year and of the semester. We will be back next semester, so please join us again after the new year. Until then, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that good stuff. We thank you again for tuning in. Good night, everybody.
We'll see you in 2020.